Oh no, it started.
Okay.
Hi guys, welcome to Insert Title Here. I'm Jessica, one of the co-hosts.
And I'm Morgan, the other co-host.
Today, Morgan and I are going to be making a podcast about a movie for a class called America from Abroad. Per the name of the class, the movie was not made by an American, even though the story is originally by an American author. The movie is called The Neon Bible.
Not only are those words not normally put side by side, but we're both from the South, so it piqued our interest that the Bible Belt was a topic that people outside of the U.S. also cared and thought about.
We wanted to tell you what this movie is about and some essential details. The Neon Bible is a coming-of-age story about David, a shy boy in the Deep South during the 1940s. His Aunt May provides the one bright spot in a rocky home life with his abusive and careless father when she comes to live with them. Told through a series of memories, David recounts how he grew up and how Aunt May became the most reliable adult figure in his life through her experience in show business.
She offers strength for David and his mother throughout the abuse and when his father is deployed. After his father's death in the war and his mother's subsequent breakdown, David steps into place as head of the household and begins providing for his family.
Despite all of the help and support Aunt May brings to the family, her flashy lifestyle and shirking of the Southern religious moral code paints her in a rather unfavorable light. In an effort to leave the small town, she gets involved with Clyde, a detached, semi-abusive man who helps pave her way out of the town to Nashville to be a star.
This leaves David to take care of his mother on his own. After Aunt May leaves, his mother quickly passes, and David decides to leave the town to get as far away as possible. We had a lot of thoughts about this film. At one point, we asked each other if it was bad or if we just didn't understand it. The Neon Bible is filmed in a way that leans into some of the stylistic choices that might be odd in other films. Visually, the film isn't overly appealing. There are a lot of bland colors and poorly made sets. Even at one point, David grows before our very eyes, and he literally stretches and changes into another actor.
We weren't sure if this was a good stylistic choice or a way to stretch a thin budget. This movie is meant to reflect David's memories as he leaves his hometown and goes elsewhere. This would give credit to the "we just don't understand it" theory. Because the movie is taking the form of David's memories, these surrealist moments can have a validity they couldn't in a traditional film.
This also makes sense with the film's pacing. Time doesn't necessarily feel linear in the movie, but it also reflects the way David remembers his life. Things are grouped by his age and state in life, but they're distinctly episodic. His life is divided into three parts: when he's 10 years old, after he graduates high school, and after his father dies. These segments are generally consistent, but the episodes within them may not actually be linear.
I know that while I was watching the film, one of the scenes that helped me orient myself in time was literally when he aged, or one of the main transitions between episodes. David walked out onto the porch as a 10-year-old boy and stared out at the sky as his aunt cared for his mother after a fight with his father. The camera remained stationary as he growed, or should I say, stretched, into the young man that he is for the rest of the movie. Because he remained in the same place, dealing with the same issues but stretched out, it showed not only his age but also emphasized the severity of his situation at home. Regardless of the rest of the scene changes in fashionable timeline, cinematically, this scene not only progressed the storyline but was extremely visually appealing.
I think that's true. It definitely emphasized his home life in a unique way. I think the scene that made the biggest impact for me was not so much a cinematic feature, though. It was a plot feature. After his graduation, his aunt and her date made him wait outside the car before he goes up to the house, so that way they can canoodle. After they're done, David and his aunt walk up to his house to find his mother singing a sad song while looking off into the distance. When she's done, she tells off the aunt for being such a quote-unquote terrible person in front of David, despite the fact that she had missed her own son's graduation. This scene brings to the forefront, for the viewer, the unreliability of the two adult figures that David has had in his life. He has an aunt who is more focused on leaving town and men than being a strong authority figure in his life, and he has a mother who, in the simplest of terms, has lost her mind. This contrast and comparison evokes sympathy for David, who just graduated school and already has to deal with the weight of supporting his family in several aspects.
I find it interesting that both of the scenes we liked out of the film are marked by the distinct moment in time, a direct contrast to the obscure linearity of basically the entire movie.
Which I think is why we found ourselves wondering, was it genius, and we're just not sophisticated enough to understand what is supposed to keep us slightly disoriented in the memories, or was it just weirdly made?
I'm honestly not sure. It was not a high-budget film. The actors were average, everyday people, by which I mean that the acting was less than stellar, but not in a trying-too-hard sort of way. The awkwardness of non-professional actors fed the general theme of the movie, the story of a life. It was not a different world or its own cinematic universe, just commonplace and normal.
You called it a story, and I think that's really accurate, because it did not come off as a movie with a distinct plot line, but literally just the story of David's life. It didn't really seem to be going in any particular direction than, well, south.
The real film critics seem to think that this movie is okay, but falls into a pattern with the rest of Terrence Davies movies. They want to see a little bit more variety from him, but this doesn't really do that.
That raises the question, then, if we would understand any of Davies' movies. Like, is this a bad movie, or is it just part of a theme that he works with?
An article in Variety about the movie called it beautifully crafted but thin and self-conscious. What does that mean? I think there are parts of this movie that could be considered beautiful, like when David grows in an instant and returns to his mother in the same place. I think the rest of it would fall more on the thin side, though.
Another theme that the Variety article points out is the autobiographical nature of Davies' works. They say that there is a love for Davies' mother and a hate for his father in many movies. While there are fewer elements of his British upbringing, this dynamic is certainly present. David's father is abusive and largely absent from the film, while his mother is fragile and David needs to protect her. Honestly, this kind of gives me Kafka vibes, and I don't know how to feel about that.
Well, looking a little bit more at the origins of this film, it's actually based on a book by John Kennedy Toole. He wrote the novel in 1954, at the age of 16, but it wasn't published until after he died. His mother tried to keep it from being published, but after she passed, Toole's other relatives got it published. And he was a Southern author, as he hailed from Louisiana.
Which I think is really interesting, because this film is not remotely made in the South. It was made in 1995 and directed by Terrence Davies. He's a British filmmaker, best known for films Distant Voices, Still Lives, and The Long Day Closes. The film stars Jacob Tierney as the 15-year-old version of David, Drake Bell as the 10-year-old version of David, Gina Rowlands as Aunt May, Diana Scarwood as Fiona, and Dennis Leary as Frank.
Yeah, I could definitely tell that this was made by a non-American, because the depiction of the South just seemed different than what I would identify as home. It holds true to the stereotypes without diving into any of the nuance.
I definitely think that the Bible and the South were big themes in the story, but it looked a little bit different than how I know I expected it being from the South. Bringing it first to the religion, or rather, Baptist revival ideology, the preacher and the congregation were eerily similar to experience I've had at revivals in the past. Except this time, there was like a radical fervor in the preacher that made the religion seem nearly hostile to the average human.
I agree. It seemed like someone who had never been to a Southern church service's idea of what it would look like. I also didn't like how the South is depicted. I'm from North Carolina, and I found myself disappointed by the places that David found himself. Instead of portraying America as a land of opportunity, and the South as a part of that, it honestly felt like Davies wanted to ensure that viewers knew that the American South was where dreams go to die.
It's really interesting that Davies drew out these points of the story to be the main takeaways. Like, it nearly feels like it's a critique of the American South rather than a coming-of-age story like the novel seemed to be.
Yeah, there was an underlying tone that was rather harsh on the United States, especially the South, in this film. No characters were ever portrayed as reliable, but I'm not sure how much of this was Davies doing versus Toole's original story.
True. I definitely think that this made me think about how much of the portrayal of the United States in films from abroad are actually just summations of and impressions that Americans have given of the region itself.
Generally, I didn't love this movie. It wasn't necessarily bad. It just felt like it had been thrown together in a way that didn't have a lot of order. This could very well have been intentional, since these were supposed to be memories, but it walked a little too close to the line of intentionally sloppy and just sloppy. There's a rich story to work with, but I think it just wasn't done very well.
Yeah, I have to agree. The cinematography was definitely interesting, and I'm glad we were able to evaluate it from a visual perspective. And it made me think about how I even describe my home to other people. Like, what will they be taking away from what I'm saying? So even though I didn't vehemently dislike this film, I will say there wasn't that oomph that made me like it or want to watch it again or really even spend money on it. I accidentally returned this movie to the library late and got charged for it, and even the late fines seemed a little too much.
I think it's safe to say that regardless of whether or not the cinematic choices were intentional or unfortunate, The Neon Bible makes an impact. Through the use of everyday actors and emphasis on the memory, viewers are drawn into David's life and have the ability to examine Southern American life in its skeletal form.
I definitely agree. Even though I kind of have a love-hate relationship with this film, it definitely got me thinking about how Southern Christianity and the South in general look when dramatized and from abroad.
And with that, I think our time here on Insert Title Here is done. So until next time, I'm Jessica.
And I'm Morgan, and I'm sure of how to end a podcast, so, bye?
Bye!
Stop!